Cat and Moose podcast. I'm Cat.
And I'm Moose. This is a true life podcast where we explore the quirks of being human.
Hey, Cat.
Hey, Moose.
What are you doing?
I am so stoked to see how fancy your background looks. Producer Sarah has totally refurbished the podcast studio, and I haven't gotten to see it in person yet, but over Zoom, it's looking pretty slamming.
Yeah, so she taped off for like 4 days. She was taping a 5x5 room. Just kidding, it's bigger than that. But the lines are perfection. She basically did the color on two opposite walls and the ceiling. Mm-hmm. So it's like this little paint bridge over my head, and it's like this black slate color. Mm-hmm. Is that how you would describe it, Producer Sarah?
It's called off black.
Got it. But it is beautiful. And then she's got this cool ass light that's she basically created with pipes and this old school something. And then there's a flickering light coming from it, which kind of makes me feel like I'm in like a horror movie at any point. And when we're not remote, it would be over your head. So you would be very creepy to me right now, Kat.
Oh, I see. It's like I would be at a rave.
No. You guys got the wrong vibe. I'm clearly not displaying.
It's less of a rave. Hold on. Let me show you. Can you see that?
Oh, yeah. It's that's totally like barely a flicker.
Yeah, it's a slow rave, like a slow, scary rave.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to work for me, Sarah.
It's supposed to be inviting, like a cabin, like, oh, this feels really cozy and warm and oh, there's a flickering light above me.
Right. It's not quite there.
Well, I look forward to checking that out.
Great.
I will check it out before I have a seizure.
Okay. It'll be the slowest seizure you've ever had.
Look what I have.
Oh, well, that is a really slamming green jar. Tell me all about it.
Well, I won't take up too much time, but I promised that I would go through the green jar that Kat gave me for Christmas in honor of what my sister gave me when we were 12 with random shit from underneath the couch cushions. And I just have a question. As I was going through this, is this Five Guys gift certificate usable?
It is usable. I think it has $5 on it.
Oh, and then this pumpkin pen is broken. Thank you for that. A glue stick.
Do you have a glue gun?
I've got a syringe for either drugs or insulin.
The syringe is unused.
So I can use the insulin?
No, there's no insulin in it. The syringe itself has not been used.
I have a Marlboro cigarette.
Yeah, that is from my old house where we flung the windows open and let the smoke out. So it's probably really stale.
This brings me so much joy. There's a lot in here, and I just want to say thank you. There's a zip tie in case I want to go to Washington. There is an alcohol swab, an eraser. I just want to say thank you, especially for this rubber band.
You're welcome. There's nothing like a blue flimsy rubber band.
I love you. Thank you for my green jar.
You are so welcome. I hope you continue to enjoy the contents of it. And the deeper you get into it, the better it's going to get. So do not delay.
I can't wait. Are there condoms at the bottom?
You'll have to see. Well, I just wanted to acknowledge that today, Monday, is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and I think that that definitely deserves a shout out on the podcast, and I hope a bunch of people listening right now are off work getting to listen, not like driving to work getting to listen.
I totally agree. And what perfect placement for Martin Luther King Jr. Day than 2 days before the inauguration of a new president?
I know it. It's pretty wild what a wild season we're in, and such a wild season that we are going to do, as promised, in 2021. We are going to have some guests on the Cat and Moose podcast, and our first guest is going to be a political analyst.
Yes. His name is Satchel, which is an amazing name, first of all. So kudos to your parents, Satchel, who happen to be friends of ours.
Yes.
But you are becoming one of the most famous sub 21 year olds who know so much about politics. In fact, way more than we do.
And so we're happy to hear from you later this week, Satchel. And we're happy that it's inauguration time. And we're happy that it's MLK Day. And I wanted to talk about one of my favorite quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King.
It better not be the same quote I want to share.
I'm sure it is.
Good.
Well, it was supposedly it was, quote unquote, made famous by President Obama, which I don't really agree with that because Martin Luther King said it. So I think Obama like breathed new life into it. And what the quote says, and I want to say something about it. The quote itself says the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice.
The arc. So, hold on. I got to break this down. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it what?
It bends toward justice.
I freaking love that.
Isn't that fantastic?
That brings me so much freaking hope.
Well, and that's the reason that, you know, Obama, he kind of breathed new life into that quote when he took the presidency. He even had that quote woven into a rug in the Oval Office.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's really quite beautiful. And the more that I've gone and read about it, though, it's kind of like provoked some thoughts and questions, which is really terrifying inside of my little brain.
Well, I want to hear what those questions are. But first, I had a picture of Barack Obama actually weaving it at the Oval Office desk.
It's like me and my friendship bracelets, man. It's like he's doing the work of the president while also weaving a Martin Luther King Jr. quote into a rug that's on the floor of the Oval Office. I can totally see that happening.
He's playing out our idea of when you work with your brain, play with your hands. So he's on all these conference calls, but he's also weaving this amazing Martin Luther King Jr. quote into a rug.
It took him all 8 years to do it.
It was his gift to Donald Trump when he left.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, here's what I have to say about that quote is the more that I've thought about it is it kind of makes it sound like Dr. King knows the, like, can see the entire arc of the moral universe, which I think is kind of a stretch. Like, none of us can really see the full arc. And when you say that it bends toward justice, that implies that we all have a shared understanding of what justice means. And so I found it really interesting as I dug into the history of this quote that he actually pulled it from a preacher named Theodore Parker. And what Theodore Parker said is he said, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. And from what I see, I am sure it bends toward justice."
Okay, that's amazing. I love that you gave that dude some props too. Poor guy's been in the shadow.
Preacher Parker, it is your time to shine on the Cat and Moose podcast. Happy MLK Day.
My favorite quote by Martin Luther King Jr., I've got two of them. One of them is, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter."
Ooh, come on.
I mean, that right there is a cat and moose value system.
Yeah, it is.
And then the other one is, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy."
Oh, man. Can we change that to say men and women?
Oh, hell yeah. Let me reread that. "The ultimate measure of a man or woman is not where he or she stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he or she stands in times of challenge and controversy."
Come on. That is so good. I love your two favorite MLK quotes, Moose.
Thank you. The thing about Martin Luther King Jr. that has always inspired me is he reminds the common folk to use their voice, right? That your voice mm-hmm. matters, not just, hey, if you're up on a pulpit or if you're on the corner of a street or wherever your soapbox is, but he's basically saying, hey, you sitting at home, your voice matters and you need to use it.
Yeah. And our voices do matter. They matter to the people around us. And for some of us, that's two people. For some of us, that's 10 people. For some of us, that's a million people. Regardless, your voice matters. So please use it.
So I've gone down a rabbit hole. I know this is surprising.
What kind of rabbit hole have you crawled down? And did you find a bunch of hairs?
Oh, I pictured like H-A-I-R-S.
Nope, I was talking about the bunnies.
Oh, got it. Okay. I have not found any hairs, but I just had the question this morning of how old is the universe? And the reason this happened is like, you know, right now as we're recording, the House is voting on impeachment and, you know, life is hard. It's hard to turn on the news. And so I decided that I would honor my humanness and really find out the science behind why we're here. So just a few things.
This shouldn't take long at all.
No, we'll be fine. Yeah, it'll be real quick. It's basically a masterclass in how long the Earth has been here. So how old do you think that the universe is?
I'm going to say like a few billion years.
Okay, you're close. 13.8 billion years
is how old the universe is. And who started the stopwatch to say that time started here? That's what I want to know.
I'm giving credit to Stephen Hawking, but I don't know that answer.
Okay.
Okay, so how old do you think the Earth is?
Let's see. I think the Earth is 6.6 billion years old.
That's really a good guess. 4.543 billion.
Okay.
Okay, so that means that there was like 9 billion years that the universe was here, but the Earth wasn't.
We were not the center of everything for all time.
Right.
Imagine.
But here's my question. How did the Earth... Well, first of all, let me keep going. First animal on the Earth. Just take a shot.
I'm going to say it was the micro amoeba.
You're really close on these. I'm so impressed, Professor Kat.
Why, thank you.
It's the comb jelly.
Okay.
It looks like a jellyfish. Very first animal on the Earth.
Okay.
So here is my question. There was like 9 billion years that there was no Earth, mm-hmm. but there was a universe.
Mm-hmm.
So what was happening during that time?
I'm thinking that like all the atoms and the molecules and the stars and like probably the sun was born and like, I guess things like that. I don't know.
I don't either. I just wonder if you
do. I'm here trying to make intelligent guesses and we both have no clue.
No clue whatsoever. But here's what I do know is around 3 billion years ago, the Earth was completely covered in water.
So that really like kind of feeds your theory of aliens are actually in the ocean.
All I'm saying, I'm glad that you made the connection here. But first of all, I have told you they're in the ocean. The first animal was a jelly, a comb jelly. So I just am wondering, you know, first of all, I mean, it does beg the question, are we aliens? Number one.
It's all about perspective.
Maybe that's a jump for some people, but and then my brain blew up in like the whole Adam and Eve thing. So then I was like, okay, when was Adam and Eve?
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
And that's if that happened as literally as it is articulated in the
book. Correct. Right.
And then some people say, was it Adam and Eve or Adam and Steve?
That is the dumbest thing anyone has ever said, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Well, no, you were repeating someone else. I think that's what they say when they say that it was Adam and Eve and not Adam and Steve against, you know, people being gay.
Yeah.
Stupid. So the Big Bang, if you believe in such a thing, was the moment 13.8 billion years ago, where the universe began as a tiny dense fireball that exploded. Okay. That's one theory. Most astronomers use the Big Bang theory to explain how the universe began. The matter that spread out from the Big Bang developed into everything in the universe, including you. So, is that hard for you to believe?
Is it hard to believe that I came from a massive explosion? Not really. It's not too much of a stretch for me. It explains so much and really gets down to the bottom of why I am in need of all kinds of therapy.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think no wonder we have trauma. We all came from a massive, you know, test tube that exploded the size of the universe. And yeah, I'm sure all the Christians are quaking in their boots right now.
Or shaking, or the Quakers are quaking. Who knows? Speaking of this topic, and I just did that thing that Bobby doesn't like that we do when I say speaking
of. Oh, Bobby.
Sorry, Bobby. It makes me think of, I had my therapy appointment this morning, and it makes me think of a question that I asked my therapist talking about like kind of the evolution of humanity and all of that. And she said to me that we are 4 to 5 times likely to remember unpleasant and traumatic things that happen to us than we are to remember pleasant and happy things that happen to us. And I said, okay, like, I don't disagree with that, because the things that have happened to me that have been unpleasant in my life, they seem to have made a bigger impact than the things that have been pleasant in my life. That doesn't feel fair. And she said, well, I didn't say it was fair. She goes, I just think that it is. And I said, how come? And she said, well, it's because of how we have evolved as a species. And so, of course, like, I was like, Professor Cap, what does this mean? What does this mean? And so you talking about all this makes me think of this. And she said that basically early on in our existence, the reason that we remember unpleasant and traumatic things is because we were built for survival. Like, the only way that we could survive is by experiencing terror or fear and trying to get away from it. So biologically, we have evolved to allow unpleasant experiences to inform the decisions that we make. So it makes sense that pleasant experiences would be less memorable than unpleasant. And I thought that was really cool perspective.
That is interesting. I've heard that before about, you know, part of the gratitude work is to highlight those positive experiences. But like, this makes me ask the question, like, what you're basically saying is our nature is to operate from a fear-based decision-making process.
Yes.
I don't want to be that way.
Well, I don't like it that way either. And like I was saying to her, I was like, that feels really unfair. And she's like, yeah, man, me too. And it's like, I was looking for this, like, you know, dear doctor of clinical psychology, like, help me understand how that is somehow fair. And she couldn't, you know, she was like, it isn't fair. It just is the way it is. And I was like, wow, well, at least, you know, you're starting from a deficit, you know, like that made me feel a little bit less broken, less damaged, less in need of fixing because of something I've done wrong. It's like, oh, because of my species, this is how I respond as a human.
I feel like we're 100% on the same wavelength today. And I love when that happens.
Me too. So,
have you heard of this character named Mark Manson?
I haven't.
He's written a bunch of New York Times bestsellers, or at least one, and it's called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F**k. And another book called Everything is F**ked, a book about hope.
Is he somehow related to Marilyn Manson?
I thought the exact same thing. But he kind of is a very specific flavor. And like, as an 8, I appreciate a lot of expletives.
Yes.
And so, you know, you have to really want to be able to handle all of that if you're going to read his stuff. But I stumbled upon his stuff this morning, and I literally Google things, as you know, mm-hmm. and our listeners know. And today's was, how do you find your purpose in life?
Nice.
I need to write these down for my therapy appointments instead of just asking Google. Okay. So one of the things that he says is a way for you to kind of find your purpose in life is, asking yourself, what is something you love to do as a child or a teenager that you lost to adulthood?
Oh, wow, man, that's a great question. How did you answer it?
Well, I'm answering in real time because, That's how we do this. For me, it's writing. Like I loved to write as a child. I remember, you know, in fifth to eighth grade, taking English classes and, you know, being able to, you know, learn all these different styles of poetry, you know, learning how to write a haiku and
like iambic pentameter and things like that.
Exactly. And so I remember laying in bed when I was in high school, and I'll never forget this. Here's a good thing that I remember and not a negative thing.
Okay.
I remember laying in bed and getting a new journal. I don't remember if I bought it or if someone gave it to me, but I wrote at the beginning, you know, I'm 16 years old and this is my first book. And
love that. And
I know. And my the name of my working title, if you will, was Just Another Nobody. And that sounds sad, but my point in the book, which, hello, I was 16, how adorable, was that like we think that we don't have a purpose. Like at 16, I had this idea and we think we're just another nobody, like, you know, and we can get into that mindset. And I remember wanting to write this book saying like, no, like there's so much inside of us that we can bring forward. I was thinking about that this morning when I read that, of like how much I love writing. And this weekend, I actually took 2 hours and I sat down and I processed what happened in the Capitol. And it was so cathartic for me, specifically for me, you know, like I know everyone has like their own way of working through things. And so that was something for me that was like, okay, this question of what is something you love to do as a child that you lost to adulthood, this is supposed to be one of the questions that points us toward our purpose in life. So do you have one of those that you feel like you sort of lost to adulthood?
The immediate thing that comes to mind is listening to loud music and kind of going wild.
Yeah.
And by going wild, I just mean like kind of dancing with abandon and just kind of acting a fool, and kind of like what I enjoy doing with my sister when she and I have sister days. You know, it's like turn on some good 80s or 90s music and just kind of go wild and have fun. And I feel like, you know, I get in my car, and when I get in my car, I typically re-listen to the podcast because I like to evaluate what we've done and see how we could maybe do it better. And when I'm not listening to the podcast, though, and sometimes I deliberately take a break from it, I'm like, I am going to listen to really loud music and sing as if I sound as good as Celine Dion, you know, and like that just like, bah! Like that feels so good to me.
Okay, that makes me so happy, because knowing you, that is like so much joy for you.
Yeah.
Okay. I had my friend Ruthie over this past weekend and Friday night, actually. And me, her, and Sarah did exactly that. We each picked a song, and for the entire song, you had to like dance your face off. And it was the best exercise. And like, I remember like glancing up and seeing them acting a fool like I was, and just thinking like, this is what being a kid feels like. It's exactly what you're talking about.
Yes. And here's where I'm going to go down the deep, dark slope of how come I don't get invited to these things.
You are invited every single time. If you knew it was a dance party, you would have said yes.
I mean, if I was just invited, I probably would have said yes. Why does Ruthie get the special treatment? It's
because
like
you say
Megan,
no a lot.
It's like here's the truth. The special treatment.
Here's the truth. You say no a lot, and
ouch,
so
when?
It happens. You do say no a lot, but I'm going to invite you every time from now on, and you're going to dance your damn face off. And even if you want to spend the night, we have lots of bedrooms.
That's awesome. So I can bring my favorite Celine Dion song and I can rock out to it.
Yeah. Which song are you going to pick?
I don't know. There's a lot.
It's got to be an upbeat one. Otherwise, you're like slow dancing with a pillow.
No, I don't want to slow dance with a pillow. I'm thinking like her song, I'm Alive, or like You Love Me
oh,
Back to
I
Life.
I love
or, like,
that
new
song.
New Day Has Come.
How do we do? What is the thing for Alive? Give me the hook.
When you call my name, I can't remember the words. I get wings to fly. I feel that I'm alive.
That is a drag queen song if I have ever heard one. I love drag queen music personally. I no joke, for my 23rd or 26th birthday, one of those two, I invited two of my best guy friends, Kenny and Brian. You might have been with us. And I dragged them literally to a drag show. And they had the time of their lives. Yeah. I was like, guys, just stick together. You're going to have a blast. And like, their mouths were open the whole time. They just were looking around like, wow, this is an underworld I've never heard of.
I mean, and it really is. I've told my bodywork therapist several times. She'll say like, you know, what's coming up for you now? And I'll just like burst out and go, I want to go to a drag show.
Seriously?
Seriously. And she'll kind of look at me and I'm like, she probably thinks I'm so crazy and so weird. And but then she invites it. She's like, I invite the crazy and I invite the weird and just you do you. And really, like, I'll be like, what is it that I want to do? What is it that I want to do? And I'm like, I want to go to a drag show. So when COVID is over, let's go to a drag show.
Absolutely. We have this place here in Nashville called Susie Wong's House of Yum.
Oh, man.
If you ever come to Nashville, go to their Sunday brunch and take your family to this, because they do a live drag show while you're actually eating a meal. And it is the most fun. Didn't we do that together, Kat?
We did. We did that together, and it was so good.
Back in the day, we used to go to drag shows, but they wouldn't start till like 11 p.m. And I was like, even in my 20s, I was like, that is super late.
It is super late. But you know what? I would gear up for it. Like if it was okay, we're going to go to a drag show and it's going to be at 11 p.m. Like I would do whatever I needed to do to be alert and awake and aware and ready to party. So when that time comes, you know what we should do is one of our Patreon levels. And if you guys don't know what Patreon is, it's the thing that keeps the Cat and Moose podcast alive. Basically, you become a part of our community called The Herd and you offer a monthly fee and that keeps the podcast going. It keeps producer Sarah from quitting every other week. And and it really does. It helps us keep going. And one of the categories in there that you can sign up for, I think, is cocktails and mocktails with Cat and Moose. And that means that we get to have dinner together somewhere in Nashville. We could take our patrons to Susie Wong's House of Yum for a Sunday brunch. So you might want to become a patron if this sounds like your dream date with Cat and Moose.
I love it. That reminds me, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but there's a show on Netflix. I think it's Netflix.
It's on HBO.
I think it's called We're Here, which it needs a better name because I always forget the name of it. But it's a group of drag queens. And again, I've spoken about this before, but in case you haven't heard me, that go to these small towns and basically like act as mediators between families who either the kids have come out or they're struggling with their identity. And in some cases, it has nothing to do with them being gay. It's about bringing kind of acceptance to these small towns. And so anyone who happens to also love drag queens, and I personally love Shangela, but you'll have to watch to find out. You know what? Let's just roll the promo because I think that'll do a better job explaining it.
Drag is about empowerment.
We travel across this country to take people from who they are to what they can be.
Thank God I brought these.
We're actually taking some locals, turning them into fierce drag queens.
Shangela, Bob the Drag Queen, and Eureka.
We came and we brought drag.
Ooh, I feel like Mary Poppins, bitch.
These small towns, there are people who have never seen a drag queen.
Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
No, I'm kidding.
I see rough around the edge.
There is improvement to be made.
I think we all go through that struggle of life, doubts and insecurities, and just people making fun of you or bullying you.
Everything about me at one point or another has been used against me. You barely made
it out alive on your own. It all started when Haley came out.
My mom had this look as she thought I would go to hell.
If you could say something to them now, what would you say?
Sorry.
I want you to feel like you have a purpose.
Honey, you can't live for nobody but yourself.
Yeah. No.
If I'm not willing to live in the shoes of somebody who does drag, then how can I expect someone to understand my experience?
Really, it's like a triumph of love over labels.
How do you feel being in drag?
sexy as f-.
I just feel like so electric.
Love is love is love. Am I right?
That's our job, to get out there and educate and continue to be visible.
We're here.
Oh my God.
It just knocked the wind out of me.
Oh, all in a gay's work.
It is so inspiring, and I just encourage anyone who's interested, even if you're not a drag queen fan right now, check it out. It's on HBO, and I promise you won't regret it. All right, so another question for you. What is something that you fantasize? I just wanted to pause there.
I was going
to
say, I can't say that on the podcast.
Sorry, I just knew I had to pause in that moment.
Yeah.
What is something you fantasize about doing but you don't do? And the reason you're afraid to do it is because of what others may think. Maybe your parents would hate it. Your friends might think you're crazy. It's something that usually scares the shit out of you for good reason.
Yeah, like I said, I can't talk about that on the podcast. That is a very deep question.
Wait, this isn't sexual. This is something you've always wanted to do. Well, it might be. And if that's the case, I want to hear about it right now. The more awkward, the better. You know, I love it.
Yeah.
But is there something, like, for me, my guess for you would be, like, doing more public speaking.
Yeah. I was just going to say it would be being more publicly vocal, I think, would be my thing. And just for example, it's like, I love the podcast so much and I want to talk about it so much. And I have to remember, like, I have another job that is not me focused. It's not focused on me being kind of the person who is sharing the message. And so I have to, I feel like this kind of internal responsibility to try to balance that. So I think you're exactly right. I think I would speak out more. I think I would share more. I think I would have a little bit more of a public voice. And at the same time, I don't sit back and hold resentment because I don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's something I do fantasize about, but I'm not sitting here angsty going like, why can't I? Like, I don't feel that way because I really love my job and I love what I do. And I kind of like the unsaid or the unseen responsibility, if you will, of influencing people of influence. So yeah. When I see my clients do things and say things and know that, oh, my leadership or my guidance or my encouragement to them has been a part of helping them say the things that they're going to say, that's really meaningful to me. And that feels even more meaningful than if it was coming out of my own mouth.
I disagree with that last sentence.
Okay.
It's not more meaningful than if it's coming out of your mouth.
Okay.
And I'm just going to let that sit there because here's the thing. I, like you, have always been in sort of that support role. Like, I've in my job, you know, had like a very prominent role, but I very prominent
because you have more to lose, man.
I'm saying, oh my God. I'm saying, like, I've been in leadership roles, but yeah. I've always been in support of artists, if you will, like you. Mm-hmm. And my mom, when she was alive, used to say to me, like, honey, you always take the number two spot. What if you were supposed to take that number one spot? Meaning, like, be the voice and not just support the voice, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think, to be honest, that we all have those two places in our lives. We are there to support someone, but we should also be able to use our voice.
Yep.
And I think the reason we're not trying to scratch that itch is the podcast is that for us in a lot of ways.
Well, that's a great point. Yep. It's a great point. And I don't think that there's anything that you have said or I have said where I go like, man, I wish I wouldn't have said that publicly.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's not like I have this need to go share a bunch of things that, oh my God, we had no idea that Kat thought that. It's like, no, like, I haven't said anything on here that I wouldn't or that I haven't said publicly. And this makes me think of a question that one of our listeners, Jimmy, called in and he asked, I would love to hear you guys talk about at your age. And he wasn't implying that we were old. He was just implying that, like, hey, we're in kind of that midlife time. What does it look like to reinvent yourself? And how do you do it? And how do you become inspired to do it. And it really made me think, I was like, what are the ways that I've reinvented myself? Like, let's just say in the past, like 5 to 10 years. And the immediate things that came to mind was me going back to school and starting the podcast. And I think that those things are, it doesn't mean that I'm moving away from what I can do or what I have done or what I'm really good at. I actually think it's making me better at what I do, you know, is doing the podcast and learning what I'm learning about listening to the body and listening to people talk and mirroring and all of that kind of stuff. So as someone who has reinvented herself multiple times, and I don't even want to say reinvented, I want to say evolved multiple times. How does that resonate with you?
For me, I feel like the idea of what your values are help support that change or that changeover. For instance, I don't feel like that you can really find your purpose in the first place if you don't know what it is that you care about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think we are supposed to evolve like at this, around this age, you know, from 40 to 50. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people reevaluate their lives and say, like, okay, I've done the rat race. One of our friends calls it the earning years.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I find that so fascinating. Like, yeah, we are in our earning years, if you will. Mm-hmm. Meaning like, you know, you're doing the rat race, you're working as long as you need to work in order to make things happen, especially if you own your own business. It can even be longer hours, you know. But as far as the first thing that comes to mind of like reinventing myself, I think this podcast has been a huge fire lit under me. To recognize, you know, what it is that I care about, going back to values of like, okay, it's not so much that my values have changed. They have evolved, you know, like I think your values, you know, they can change. I'm not saying they can't, you know, there are some people who have, you know, very different values in their second half of life. But for me, I have found that it's been more about, recognize putting value more in people and less on achievements or money would be the thing that I've noticed in my life.
Well, and I think, you know, to speak about values and them evolving, I think our values mature.
Yeah.
You know, because I've always been someone who is relational and cares about people and really cares what people have to say and how they feel and what they think and are they able to express themselves and all of that. And I've gotten to a place now where it's less about encouraging people to do that and more about celebrating people when they do it. Mm-hmm. And I really love that. Like one of our clients wrote a song and it was actually a song about her dog. And I listened to it and I was like, what's this song going to be like? And I ended up wrecked and in tears at the end of the song because the chorus line says, I know you're going to leave me and I don't want you to.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it just hit me like this huge like burst of love for my dogs. And I was like, man, like this person made me feel something because of what she said. And I celebrated that with her. So it wasn't about me going like, hey, own your place as a songwriter, do your thing. Like she's already owning her place and doing her thing. It was more about me celebrating that thing that she does and does so well. It was kind of cool.
I love that, Kat. One other thing that this Mark Manson character said that, you know, was a big aha to me is that what most people don't understand is that passion is the result of action, not the cause of it.
What? Unpack that for me. I don't know that I agree with that yet.
Well, I guess what he's saying, and again, like I'm not saying it has to be true, but it did make me think, is that basically he's saying you have to put the action in order to really reach the passion that you're looking for. So it's almost like if you know what it is that you care about, start doing things and you're going to find if the passion sort of pops up or it doesn't.
But if you say you're finding to find what you care about, then you're already passionate about it. It's like which comes first, the chicken or the egg.
I don't know.
I don't know what I think about Marilyn Manson's cousin's theory on that. I think that needs to be vetted a little bit more.
All right, one more quote from him that I thought was brilliant. Ultimately, death is the only thing that gives us perspective on the value of our lives, because it's only by imagining your non-existence that you can get a sense of what is most important about your existence.
He's definitely Marilyn Manson's cousin.
Wait, don't you agree though? Like to my point of last episode, talking about why the hell are they teaching people about checks and balances and how the Senate works mm-hmm. when you're 10 years old, because right. you have no grid
right.
of how that affects your life. Yep. They should be teaching that in a course when you're 40.
Yes.
To that point, it isn't until our second half of life, which for whoever, you know, everybody can find that whenever they find it, but that you start going like, I don't care so much what I'm going to be remembered as, because I won't be here, but I want to make sure that my time was worthwhile.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I feel like that too. Like I always say, like, I want to leave a legacy, but I feel the same way you do. It's not so much that I want to be remembered, is that I want to hope that the impact I made while I was here was like as best as it could be, or as good as it could be.
So if you were to believe in reincarnation, just go with me.
Uh-huh.
Would we have less of a sense of, oh, it's almost over? Because if you knew you were going to reincarnate into like four other people down the line, would no wonder we're tired. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, the fact that in a previous life, I was an ancient Chinese healing medicine man, and now I am Kat on the Cat and Moose podcast, that took a lot of evolving.
That's that right. Exhausting. You are worn out.
Yeah, absolutely worn out. So the future version of me is what I think you called a jelly comb.
Yeah, and who knows if time is even linear. So maybe next round we're back at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, or we are the jelly comb right now.
God, exactly. We're just a bunch of aliens afraid of aliens, and they're the same species.
Okay, so I want to talk about stuff under the sea. You're not going to believe what I got to do this past weekend.
I'm like mad now that you haven't told me until now.
I went scuba diving with Sarah McLachlan.
Okay. I know you're sober, so it's definitely not alcohol. What are you huffing again?
I am not huffing and puffing anything. I went scuba diving with Sarah McLachlan, who is one of my favorite artists and favorite songwriters. And somehow I was as physically fit as she is, because whenever I see her post, I'm like, oh my God, like she's so fit. She and I went scuba diving this weekend off of the coast of British Columbia. And when we were under the water, we were seeing all of these amazing tropical fish and all these different colored undersea animals. And I saw the octopus and I was afraid of it. Like the same octopus from my octopus friend. And I was telling Sarah McLachlan all about it.
Yeah, he's chasing you because you told him his life wasn't worthy.
No, I'm such an awful person. So he revisits me in my dream, apparently.
Yeah.
So this is what happened, is I had a dream this weekend that I went scuba diving with Sarah McLachlan, and it was fantastic.
Well, were you underwater like yeah. most of the time of the dream, or did you come up?
We came up, but it's like it started out us having a conversation about how, you know, we were getting our wetsuits on and putting our mask on and checking the oxygen thing and all of that. And I remember thinking, like, kind of like I feel like about my clients, it's like, I know that you are of public notice. I know that you're a public figure. Like, I know that in some realms, like, you're famous, but like, I didn't feel special to be with her because of any of that. Like, I felt special to be with her just because of who she is. And I just remember thinking, this is so cool. I'm getting to go scuba diving with Sarah. And so we got ready and we were chit chatting, and then we went scuba diving, and then we talked more afterwards. So it was kind of like, you know, about half in the water and half chit chatting. It was the most lovely dream.
Did you guys afterwards go up to I picture it looking like Coney Island and getting an ice cream, and then you look at each other and sing, your love is better than ice cream.
No, we didn't. And I didn't confess to her that's my least favorite song of hers. So for those of you Canadian listeners who are listening, I love Sarah McLachlan. I don't love Ice Cream or her song about ice cream, but there you go. Go scuba diving with Sarah off of the coast of British Columbia and see fish as if they are Caribbean fish. That's so stupid. So it was like funny. The best dream. It was like I had such a good time with Sarah McLachlan.
I freaking love it.
I mean, what makes you dream that shit?
Chinese food.
we're gonna take alcohol from your life, Kat, and we're gonna impart like really fun friendships with people you really want to be friends with.
I'm telling you, like, you didn't know there was all these extra benefits to not drinking.
I had no idea. I would have stopped drinking decades ago.
Which, by the way, you have been drinking some Heineken 0.0. Isn't that surprisingly good fake beer?
It is surprisingly good fake beer. Yeah. And I'm thankful to have it here. Like, I always wondered when I saw you drinking it, like when we worked together a lot pre-COVID, I would see you drinking like the, you know, zero gravity beer, no alcohol beer. And I'm like, how could that possibly be satisfying? And I'm glad that you left a few here at the office. Much like you steal my Diet Grapey Co., I've been stealing your Heineken 0.0 out of the office fridge, and it is remarkably tasty.
It is good. You only have one Grape Co. left, just so you know.
Oh, I know. I saw you pop that one open yesterday.
I know. It was fun to work in the office together.
It was so fun to work in the office together. I hope we get to do it more. And I hope that society in general gets to be together more in 2021. Because I don't know about you, I am really, really missing like live and in-person community.
Me too. By the way, if you are a patron on Patreon, we just sent you a fun care package from Kat Moose and producer Sarah.
And let's just say that it is delectably delicious and it involves quite a bit of alliteration.
Wow. I just realized that I have those fake eyebrows on. I thought I got rid of them for the Zoom. And I was like, why do my eyebrows look so filled in?
So for the first like third of this time that we've been doing this, I was thinking like, what have you done with your makeup that makes your eyebrows look so pronounced? And then I realized, I was like, wait a minute, she's got one of those Zoom filters on.
Whoops.
Okay, so I just told you about an experience that I had that was not a real experience with a Canadian. I want to tell you about a real experience that I have had with a Canadian this week.
Oh, I can't wait. Is this a part of your fantasization?
No, it's not a fantasization. Is that a word?
I think it's fantasy.
Fantasization.
Tell us about your fantasization with Canadians.
Well, we got an email from one of our listeners who ironically lives in British Columbia, and her name is Jackie. And Jackie sent us a note just saying that she enjoyed the podcast, and it was a really sweet note. And so I told her, hey, I'm going to mail you some Cat and Moose stickers. And so I got a Cat and Moose card out and I wrote her a sweet note and I put some stickers in there and I went to address the envelope and I realized I don't know how to mail something to Canada. Like, do you just put a forever stamp on it? And does that get it to Canada? So, of course, I had to go on this Professor Cat, you know, wild goose chase of going, how do I mail Jackie her Cat and Moose stickers? And it was actually a little bit challenging to figure out how many forever stamps I needed to put on a standard envelope to send her a card. And I found out that to send a first class letter to Canada from the United States, it costs $1.20. And forever stamps are worth 55 cents. So I couldn't just put two stamps on there. I had to put three on there. So
I didn't know forever stamps had an actual price. I thought it was, hey, forever, you're allowed to send this shit no matter what.
Which I think is why it was really hard for me to find the answer to the question, because I'm like, yeah, how much is a forever stamp? And it's like, it's worth the current value of postage. And I'm like, no shit. Like, what is the current value of postage if it costs me $1.20 to send something to Canada? So in this process, I thought it would be cool for our listeners to know, because this is the first time that I've been made aware that this is a thing. There are international forever stamps.
Oh, really? I did not know that was a thing either.
I didn't
And know. I don't think they should be calling that shit forever if it's not real.
Well, it is real. It is real. Like they basically hold the value of the current value of one piece of postage, whatever that current value is. So if you buy it today. But that's
the problem. Current and forever are not the same thing.
Well, I can't pretend to figure out things beyond my comprehension. Here's what I do know is it's kind of like buying stock in or buying Bitcoin. It's like buying Ethereum. It's basically going like, this is not of real value, but I'm going to buy in now in hopes that way down the road, this thing is going to have value.
I need somebody to buy a forever stamp and hold it for 50 years and see if that shit works.
See if it works, man. I bought two booklets of international forever stamps for the Cat and Moose podcast directly from USPS.gov.
I hate USPS right now.
Me too.
I love that you didn't even ask why.
Me too. Me too. Why do you hate the US Postal
I don't.
Service?
Actually, I don't. One of my friend's moms works for the United States Postal Service. And her name is Val. And actually, she might be retired. I don't know. But I don't hate the USPS. I hate stamps.com.
Ooh.
That is the most jacked up system. It's from 1987 before there was beta. And I might as well pull out my Commodore 64 and because it basically is like this. Yo, do you want to buy stamps? Yes. Here's my money. And then they're like, sorry, we don't know how to print stamps either. They just take your money and then the minute you print something, if your printer doesn't work, there's no way to reprint it. So if anyone has any ideas of how to do mailings besides stamps.com, cheers. I will take those ideas.
And I tell you what, like I boycotted stamps.com last year because I realized they were charging me $13.99 a month just to have a membership. And then it required me to be a science professor of the current modern day printer, which is not a thing. And every time I would try to print out those stamps, like they would print backwards. They would print on the side of the stamp that was slickery. So the ink would just like erase itself. And then, like you said, it would be like, sorry, no yeah. for you.
There's no reprint. By the way, talk to me about slickery.
Well, it basically makes me think of a slickery seal. Just like you, Moose, you are a slickery seal.
Do you also say kitty corner instead of catty corner?
I don't. Probably because my name is Cat. Okay, so if anybody knows, Moose, you and producer Sarah know that I am not big on social media. And our listeners know that too, that I'm not big on social media. At the same time, I am not 100% inept when it comes to social media. So much so that a friend sent me a link to a tweet this morning that I clicked on. And I actually got to the tweet that I was supposed to see, and I watched a video that I was actually quite inspired by, and it was by a guy named Corey Forrester. Have you heard of this dude?
Only because you sent it to me. And by the way, that thing you speak of is called a hyperlink. It takes you to where it wants you to go. And I know it's like Space Odyssey, but just so you know, that's what that is.
It is. It makes me feel like I'm in an episode of like Star Trek or something. I'm exactly. like, wow, I clicked on this thing in my phone and it took me to the internet. That's amazing.
Wow. You can also ask Google any emotionally stunted questions that you need to, by the way. Just another tip.
But you can't ask Siri because she's dumb.
She's dumb. Okay, back to Corey and his amazing speech that Sarah is worried is going to offend some people, but we're not.
I'm not worried that it's going to offend anybody, because if it does, I seriously want to have an interview with you. If this speech offends you, and not the language he uses. I understand if you don't like the F word and the S word and things like that. Like, that's fair if that offends you. The spirit of what he is saying, if it offends you, I want to have a conversation because I want to understand what is offensive about this. So this guy, Corey, the buttercream dream Forrester, is a comedian, and he went on a rant about the people who stormed the Capitol last week. And I think what he has to say is absolutely spot on.
Sarah, can you play it for us?
I hope you're f-ing happy and sad, you f-ing little piss pants pieces of shit. Ooh, we're going to storm the Capitol. Let's storm the Capitol. We're patriots. You're a f-ing coward. Patriots. Jesus Christ. F-ing idiots that I played high school football with wearing a goddamn American flag bandana talking about, we got to get up there and storm. We got to take our country back. From what? From f-ing what? What are you so goddamn upset about? What has anyone ever done to you? You f***ing entitled piece of shit. Don't you ever f***ing call me one again. Don't you ever say, Corey, you f***ing snowflake. You're a liberal. That means that y'all what? Want some people to not be sick every now and then? Is this the thing that you can't f***ing stand? So you've got to get in your goddamn f***ing piece of shit Ford F-150 you got from your dad, drive it to D.C. and pitch a f***ing fit? Is that what it is? Is it healthcare? Is it still with the f***ing guns? Is that what is it? You said Obama was taking them. 8 f***ing years ago you said that. Nothing. What is it that this country hasn't f***ing given you? You literally got escorted out of the Capitol building aside from the ones that they had to f***ing shoot. Is that what it takes? Did you just want to be a f***ing martyr? God, you're so f***ing pathetic. Do you not ever just sit there and think, my kids are going to see this. My grandkids are going to see this. They're going to put it in the textbook, and you're going to look like the dumbest mother in the world. Nobody will give a shit about Watergate. Nobody. That is, dude, I'm out of breath from how stupid y'all are. What is it that this country doesn't give you that you think you have to do some bullshit like this? But when you see a black person actually get shot, no gun in their hands, nothing. Oh, they should just comply. F*** you. F*** you. F*** you. What is your goddamn problem? Quit giving, just quit embarrassing me, man. I want my f***ing country back. How about that? God damn it. F*** y'all, you f***ing cowards.
Wow.
I am so moved by that.
Is it the anger in his voice cathartic to hear someone who is kind of a country boy himself be like, seriously, what are you so mad about?
I think that is what's cathartic about it to me, is that he is a man with the Southern dialect, and he clearly is, like you said, like a country boy, and he is talking to like the people who did this in a way that I think is actually really, really warranted.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Cause that, I mean, honestly, that was something I hadn't thought about, is like, really, what are you so mad about? Like, obviously it could be the votes. They think the votes are stolen, which is garbage. But like, yeah, nobody's taking your guns.
Right. Nobody's taking your guns. Nobody's taking more money from you. It's like, if anything, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I agree with him that like, what has been taken from you? And is it so bad that you need to, now I understand like peaceful protest, like that's something you have a right to as being an American and living under the Constitution, but you're going to deny yourself that right if you keep acting this way.
Lord Jesus, thank you, Corey, for putting into words, and some of those words had to be beeped out, but thank you.
Thank you, the buttercream dream. We appreciate you. Special thanks to our producer, Sarah Reed.
To find out more, go to catandmoosepodcast.com. Production.